Funding for Think comes from SMU Doctor and Master of Liberal Studies programs.
Each individual human brain is as different as each individual snowflake. The ways we think, feel, react to events, and interact with other people are products of our brains. That means people are wonderfully, miraculously unique, and it means there are lots of ways to be mentally healthy, but also to be mentally ill. This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. There's a new 12-part documentary series on PBS stations across the country, including KERA here in North Texas. Its goal? To look at mental health and wellness from a fresh perspective, exploring the experience of mental health challenges and triumphs through personal stories. Harry Lynch is host and producer of Stories of the Mind. The series airs Sundays at noon on KERA-TV. Harry, welcome back to Think.
Thanks, Chris. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here again.
When you surveyed the landscape and looked at how mental health was covered on TV, what did you find lacking?
Well, the typical story of mental health is really not about mental health. It's about mental illness. It's actually about the very, very small percentage of people that have a mental illness and usually related to violence. So the way that we talk about mental health is usually not a very positive one. Unfortunately, that's not really the story because there are millions of people who are, succeeding with their mental health challenges. And there are many, many more millions of people, really everybody, who could benefit from better mental health. I really liked your intro because, one of the things that's very important to us is trying to change the conversation, reframe the conversation away from the instant association of mental illness to mental wellness. I mean, when you say mental health to someone, they almost always immediately think, oh, yeah, depression or schizophrenia. Where when you say physical health, they might say exercise and eating well. And so physical health has a very positive connotation and mental health has a negative one. And it really shouldn't be that way. It should actually be equally positive, if not more so. Your brain obviously controls everything that your body does. And so having a healthy mind should be at least as important as having a healthy body.
I'm sorry. Please continue.
No, go ahead.
I was thinking about, everybody's tired of hearing the diabetes and, mental illness association. But I have a few friends who have well-controlled diabetes, and I think of them as healthy people. They have this condition that needs to be taken care of, but I don't think of them as other than healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily the way we think about people if we know that they have a mental illness, which is, I think, one of the things you're trying to change here.
Yeah, absolutely. There are millions of people who are succeeding out there. We hear the stories of the tiny few who are not, or the minority who are not. But there are millions of people out there who are. And so one of the ways we wanted to look at mental health in a surprising kind of fresh perspective was to look at the millions of people or great stories of some of the millions of people who are succeeding in really kind of inspiring and unusual and surprising ways. And so, the whole series is very positive and upbeat and inspirational and emotional and even entertaining. There were many ways to approach this, and we really didn't want to do it in kind of a clinical, even the word schizophrenia sounds kind of scary. We didn't want to do it that way. We want to do it in a very human and positive way.
The first episode dives right into depression, which is so common. One of the subjects you interviewed was Julie Hirsch of Dallas. So let's hear from her.
At the point that I was walking up the mountain, there was just a compulsion to die. I told myself things like, you don't deserve to be here.
You don't deserve to be here.
Your kids would be better off. They can have another mother.
They can have
somebody better.
Somebody better.
You're never going to get better.
You're never going to get better.
You're never going to get better. I remember standing at the edge and looking down and thinking, this isn't going to work. I'm going to bounce off this rock, and then I'll end up paralyzed and depressed. But if I were paralyzed, then I wouldn't be able to kill myself.
After the suicide attempt, my psychiatrist suggested ECT, or electroconvulsive therapy, and I was terrified. I can remember waking up the next morning and thinking, who is this person, and how could have I possibly thought this way? And it was so dramatic. So that's when, for me, it crystallized that this is a disease
I felt 180 degrees differently, and nothing had changed. My husband hadn't changed, my kids hadn't changed, my house hadn't changed, my life hadn't changed. But all of a sudden, I was changed from a person who felt like I deserved to die to a life that had possibility.
That was Julie Hirsch in the new series, Stories of the Mind. Following her recovery after years of suffering, Julie Hirsch has devoted her life to raising awareness about depression. She and I know each other a bit, and I emailed her recently. Mm-hmm. And in her response, she noted that the rift between psychiatry and psychology, the view of mental illness is largely chemical or electrical in nature, or the product perhaps strictly of our experiences and our patterns of thinking. That's problematic to her. Did that tension play into the kind of reporting that you did for the series?
You know, it's funny. I mean, there definitely is that tension that exists. You know, we didn't try to solve that disagreement, and we really didn't dive into it that much. I mean, we're not experts. We're not doctors. We really tried to focus on the human stories. Of course, we did extensive research, and you know what our research shows is that both of those things certainly have an impact in people's mental health and mental illness. And, you know, she mentions ECT, electroconvulsive therapy, popularly known or previously known as electroshock therapy, which has been a controversial treatment. We allowed people to talk about their treatments that were successful for them or not successful for them in any ways that they wanted to. So we're not pro or against ECT. We're not pro or against any kind of pharmaceutical therapy. Or any rift between psychologists and psychiatrists. We really want to get out there that there are many different approaches for this. Many things work for people. The important thing is to try to get out there. And if you are facing any challenges, to seek treatment. You know, I don't know how many millions of people will suffer with depression in a given year in the United States, but it's about 10 million, and only about a third of those will seek treatment. And it's the same for anxiety. So, you know, there's a lot of people out there who are suffering and not leading as full a life as they could simply because they won't seek treatment. So that's got to change.
Another of your subjects was the musician Thor Harris, and he has said, it's really interesting, he's not fearless in the face of stigma that might follow him admitting his struggles with depression, but he believes for him, secrecy can be lethal.
Yeah, I mean, what a great character he is, and what a phenomenal speaker he is on the subject. You know, he was also another person who attempted suicide and then, you know, kind of decided that that was not what he wanted to do. And he's lived a very full life after that. He still has depression. He still manages it. But he has an incredibly full life because of it. Yeah, I think some of the things that he has to say are spectacular. One of the things he says is that, you know, it's self-preservation is our strongest instinct, our strongest impulse. And so it's very odd when someone opts to commit suicide. It's simply not... you know, it doesn't really have to do with willpower. It doesn't really even have to do with a rational decision because it's kind of against everything that's ingrained in us. He has some great things to say in that episode.
Over and over, it comes up that people struggling to maintain or regain their mental health need a support network to help them survive and recover. What did you learn over the course of reporting this series about the best ways to rely on our networks when we're not mentally well?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the episodes is called Ways to Wellness. I think it's episode number 5. And, a little background. So this series is produced by the Mental Health Channel. Which is our organization. Mental Health Channel is a free online resource for anyone to be able to log into and view 24 hours a day commercial-free for mental health content. It's all and a lot of the content was kind of repurposed and re-edited and polished up and came into this series. But one of those episodes that's online but not in the series is about the power of connectedness and the value of connectedness and simply having a social network and relying on people and being open and connected to those people is hugely, hugely beneficial to your mental health. So support networks are vital. Families are often the first and the most important mental health caregivers for people who are suffering challenges. And I think episode 7 or 8... what is it? Episode 9 is purely on families and how families, not doctors, and really not the people who are suffering, on how families care for family members that might be having mental health challenges. So the support network is huge, is critical.
We're speaking this hour with producer Harry Lynch about Stories of the Mind, a new series that will air Sundays at noon on KERA television. It's a production of the Mental Health Channel. If you would like to join our conversation, we have lines open at 1-800-933-5372. You can email think@kera.org or find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think. Back in 2 minutes with Harry Lynch.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, where students can customize their degree, like Margie Evans, nationally published creative writer. More at smu.edu/MLS.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with producer Harry Lynch. He produced and hosts the new series Stories of the Mind, also in collaboration with the Mental Health Channel and KLRU. It will be airing on PBS stations, including KERA. You can see it here Sundays at noon on KERA television. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Harry, the next episode after depression focuses on the experiences of veterans. We've heard a lot about the effects of post-traumatic stress. Is it a reaction? Is a reaction to, you know, that kind of stress, that trauma, is it a sign of mental illness, or is it like a normal response that still requires special attention?
Well, I think like most mental illnesses, that, you know, a small response is quite normal. I mean, anxiety disorders are the most common type of mental illness, but anxiety is actually quite normal. It's your kind of threat response. It's when it goes kind of overboard and becomes an anxiety disorder, then it's a mental illness. And I think, you know, again, I'm not a doctor, but I think that PTSD is probably something similar to that. You know, a traumatic experience requires that you recover from it. And so I think some amount of recovery is natural and normal. But I think that, you know, when it begins to control your life, then it becomes abnormal and needs treatment. You know, one of the things that's important to know about the Veterans series and about veterans in general is that not all of them have PTSD. I mean, right. it's kind of inflated a little bit in the media. Certainly many of them come back and reintegrate and do just fine, don't have PTSD. But, you know, many do. And those who do definitely need our support and our treatment. You know, our Veterans series doesn't focus only on PTSD. That's one of the segments and one of the episodes that you'll see on mentalhealthchannel.tv is about PTSD. But we also deal with depression and survivor's guilt and substance abuse, which can often be, you know, self-medication if you're suffering from other things, and the basic challenge of reintegration. You know, for a lot of veterans, the military is a very structured environment. You have a lot of purpose and a sense of mission kind of at all times. That's the way that it's organized. And when you come back to civilian life, a lot of that disappears. And so just purely reintegrating can be a challenge. So we have two episodes that are purely about reintegration. I think one of those segments is also in the in the PBS episode.
I want to hear a little bit, hear from Cody Wilson. He's a veteran who lost a leg. The process of getting a prosthesis turned out to be very different from what he expected.
Ward 57 is basically the amputee ward in Walter Reed. Took me 3 months to even get a prosthetic casted. And once I did, it was totally different than what I thought it was going to be. I thought I was going to slip it on and see you later. I'll be back later, you know. Once I did get up and walking and moving around where I could wear it all day long without taking it off, it swelled up on me one morning and it started getting really red and I had a bone infection. He immediately took me into surgery and cut my leg back 4 more inches, so I had to start that whole process over again. And that's where I kind of went downhill. I was just like, it's never going to end. Going to cut me one piece at a time. You just get withdrawn and don't touch me, leave me alone. Just nasty points. I had to decide if I was going to crawl out of that or make it out of it, or be easier just to not make it out of it at all.
We can let you know that Cody Wilson did make it out. But one of the things compounding his suffering was what you mentioned earlier, Harry, and that's survivor guilt. When we talk about survivor guilt, basically we just quickly reassure people who feel it that they shouldn't feel it, but that doesn't take the emotion away from them.
No, it's a very powerful thing. You know, why did I survive when someone else didn't? And it's especially powerful for those who were, in charge of a platoon or in charge of several of them. And Cody was a commander and somebody underneath him in his own truck right next to him was killed and he wasn't. And he felt like, you know, he couldn't, he couldn't go to the funeral. His responsibility to take care of his men was something that, you know, he felt like he had failed, even though, you know, he was blown up by an IED. He really had no choice in the matter. But it's something that never goes away. There's another piece on a veteran who's now the commander of the Combat Vets Motorcycle Association, which is a fantastic organization that allows these guys to get back together. And the same thing, you know, he wonders why did some of my men not come back and I did? And so he feels, and I think Cody does too, a sense of mission to get out there and do something positive, partly as a duty to them, to honor them. And I think that's a great thing. It's one of the ways that people with survivor's guilt can overcome it. But yeah, it doesn't just go away. It's one of those things that, you know, like many mental health challenges, they take consistent care. They can be managed. The great thing about mental health challenges is that they respond well to treatment, and they can be managed much more often, much more successfully often than physical illnesses. But yeah, so you're right. The survivor's guilt can persist.
What we've learned, you know, the growing body of research about the power of a sense of purpose or meaning in one's life is really astonishing. I think humans have probably always understood this to a degree, but now science is coming in and saying, yes, this really matters if you want to feel mentally well and healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly not just for veterans. I mean, I think all of us can experience that in our life. And this comes back to the idea of mental health in a positive way, mental wellness. Certainly, most of us can imagine or remember back to those times that we felt most connected and that we performed our best. And those usually were times where we were really motivated by a mission and a sense of purpose. So, yeah, I totally agree. I think that people have understood that for a long time, for thousands of years. But you do have to be reminded of that. You know, you do have to be. It takes a moment for you to be able to step back and look at your life and remember how powerful purpose can be. It's a huge motivator, and it's also a great step towards optimum mental wellness.
All right, let's go to the phones now. We have Jeremiah on the line in Dallas. Hi, Jeremiah.
Hey, how are y'all?
Very well, thanks.
Very good. Thank you.
Oh, this is a really interesting conversation, but I wanted to ask a question to Mr. Lynch and really just kind of get an opinion and a feel for his position about addiction. And I know you had mentioned substance abuse earlier briefly, but I just wanted to see what he thought about addiction as a mental illness and things such as maintenance therapy and detox and rehab and how just now it seems people are accepting addiction as a disease of the brain. And I just kind of wanted to get a feel for, you know, how he felt about that and what he thought.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, again, I'm not a doctor, but we do a lot of research on this subject, so I'll give you my few opinions on it. There are some who believe that that addiction is purely a chemical kind of condition of the brain. And there's some research to support that. There are others who believe, and my empirical experience would tend to be more in this camp, that addiction is oftentimes self-medication. Nobody really wants to be hungover every day. I'm sure that's not something that's very attractive to anybody. You know, nobody really wants to depend on something, to be addicted to something. But a lot of times those things start because they are self-medication, and then, you know, the addiction happens. Oftentimes people who are addicted will find that once they are no longer using whatever that substance was, that there might be an underlying challenge, often depression or anxiety. And then they're able to get at that. And oftentimes, my uncle was this exact example. Oftentimes when they're able to get at the depression, if that's what that was in his case, that underlay his alcoholism, then he no longer had a desire to drink. So not everybody works that way, of course. But I think both of those things are playing a part there. I think that, you know, it is a chemical response. I think oftentimes that chemical response can be triggered by an urge to self-medicate. You know, if you're not willing for societal reasons or funding or whatever, if you're not willing to go seek treatment for a mental health challenge through, you know, whatever doctor or therapist or counselor you might want to seek, it's pretty easy to go get some alcohol or some drugs. And so oftentimes it starts as self-medication.
We know that sleep disturbances can be symptoms of a lot of diagnosable mental illnesses. I love that you did a whole episode on sleep, like in week 7, from the perspective that all of us will be like mentally fitter and healthier if we are paying attention to good sleep hygiene.
Absolutely. That's one of my favorite episodes. You know, when we were concepting that, when we were thinking, okay, how can we do this in a way that's really fun, that everybody can relate to, yet at the same time drives home the incredible importance of sleep. And so we essentially concocted a sleep test, where we got some volunteers overseen by a doctor, and we kept them up for 36 hours straight, and we all together in one kind of apartment, and we watched what happened to them. They did a bunch of psychological tests, you know, kind of as it went along. We watched their kind of mental capabilities degrading. We saw, you know, had some simple tests like cooking together and collaboration, and you know, things like their talents that they know how to do, like play guitar or translate. And we watched all those kind of degrading, and it was, you know, it was very funny, very interesting. And, you know, what we saw and what the doctor, you know, verifies, what we see in those 36 hours of sleep deprivation is the same thing that you get in repeated sleep debt. So, you know, a week or 2 weeks or a month of not enough sleep, and you begin to see those exact same symptoms. So we found that was a really interesting and fascinating way to talk about that. You know, if there's only one thing in mental wellness that people remember from this conversation or the show, it should be getting your sleep. It's simply the most important thing towards your mental wellness. You know, I was operating to get the whole mental health channel going. Me and probably several of us were operating on 5 hours of sleep for months at a time, and just feeling horrible and looking horrible, and, you know, and just not operating at our peak. And when we did that show, and the psychiatrist says, you know, a lot of studies are showing that sleep deprivation in middle age leads to senility in later years. That was kind of all I needed to hear to think, you know what, I don't want to end up that way. And so I've always been getting at least 6 and usually over 7 hours since that show, and I feel remarkably better. So I really think that sleep is huge. Sleep is huge.
Producer and host Harry Lynch is my guest. His Mental Health Channel series, Stories of the Mind, airs Sundays at noon on KERA-TV. If you would like to join our conversation, you can call 800-933-5372. You can also email think@kera.org or send me a tweet. I'm @ChrisBoydThink.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, where students can customize their degree, like former student Dr. Candace Bledsoe, educator and community leader in diversity and inclusion. More at smu.edu/GLS.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with Harry Lynch, producer and host of Stories of the Mind. It's a Mental Health Channel series that will be airing Sundays at noon on KERA television. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372. Let's go on the phone now to Donna in Frisco. Hey, Donna.
Hello, Chris and Mr. Lynch. Thank you so much for this fascinating show. Quick comment. Mike Wallace was very open about his struggles with depression, and a few other celebrities have also been. And because they're so established and successful, it had no ill effects on their careers. But that is not true when it comes to people who are less famous, who are not celebrities. It could be career suicide to admit that you have struggles with depression. And I just wondered if you could talk about that.
Thanks for your call.
Sure. It is much harder. It is getting easier. But, you know, there are many reasons for that. I mean, even though we have recently, or not so recently, but a couple of years ago, Senator Ted Kennedy, before he died, was instrumental in passing a mental health parity law that theoretically will make all mental health treatments coverable by insurance. Now, that's kind of still working its way through the system. But yeah, you know, even health insurance, it's hard to get, get covered for that kind of stuff. So, you know, many people have depression. Only a third of them, as I mentioned before, will seek treatment. Many very successful people and very, you know, known, like the guy who ran CNN for years, had depression and obviously, you know, built CNN from nothing into a major international news network. So, you know, it certainly is very common. You know, on mentalhealthchannel.tv, we have a series called Celebrated Minds. And it's actually been hard for us to get celebrities to come and do an episode. But the first one is with Glenn Close. And then she also appears in our Family Portrait PBS episode, which is, I think, episode number 8. So, yeah, you know, more and more celebrities are coming out and admitting to mental health challenges. They have mental health challenges just like everyone else. What is great about those stories is that most of them are, you know, most of them feel comfortable coming out because they're success stories. And they show that, yes, everybody can struggle. And, yes, everybody can manage when you make a commitment to it and when you get treatment and stick with it. So, yeah, but that doesn't mean that stigma and the double standard doesn't still exist for many, many people. It would be great if everyone could be open about it, just as everyone could be open about any other disease. But the truth is, we can't yet. But that's changing.
So, Harry, there may well be some biological reasons why adolescence and early adulthood are so critical and can be times when people experience severe mental illness for the first time. But there may also be things about the way our society works. What did you learn about that?
Certainly. I mean, there are a lot of pressures put on young people. I think you're referring to kind of episode 3, which is critical years.
Yeah.
And, you know, what a magnificent time of life it is to go to college. It's your first time or to graduate high school and not go to college. But it's your first time kind of away from home. It's your first time getting a job. It's your first time kind of setting off on your own path. And all that's very exciting, but it's also stressful. And you're also exposed to lots of things that you may not be familiar with. And so, yeah, I think there's many, many societal pressures that happen to people in that 18 to 24 or, you know, really probably 16 to 26 range. You know, lots of chemical changes happening in your body and in your brain. Most people think that your brain isn't really fully developed until you're 24, 25 years old. So lots of development still happening in your brain. Lots of biological things happening. But yes, so societal pressures. It's a time when a lot of people are exposed to more substances than they've ever been exposed to. It's a lot of time. It's a time when oftentimes sexual assault can happen. It's a time when, you know, kind of the first serious romantic relationships happen for people. So and a time when you're meeting the people who may be your friends for the rest of your life. So lots of exciting things, but lots of big societal changes and that can affect you.
One young woman talked about, you know, getting to college and she'd been a really successful student and she was an athlete. She still had to find her tribe, you know, in a way that she hadn't had to do since probably she started school.
Absolutely. I mean, I really think it's, it's a cliche, but you do have to find yourself at that time of your life. And, you know, again, it's exciting, but it also can be stressful. That's a great story. She's a very powerful character, you know, somebody who, by all outside appearances and really by her performance, she was a huge leader. You know, she was the top performer one of the top performers on the University of Michigan water polo team and ended up being the captain of the team. And she's physically just so powerful. But she, you know, was suffering from depression and anxiety and again, has had to learn to manage that and is doing that successfully.
All right, let's go back to the phones now at 800-933-5372. We have Penny on the line in Dallas. Hi, Penny.
Hi. How are you guys doing today?
Very well, thanks.
Very good, thanks.
I love this show. I've got a multi-question thing, and it all goes together. I would like to know, what do you do if a mixed diagnosis happens with mental health? How does a misdiagnosis happen, and what comes after? What is a support group for people who have been misdiagnosed?
Did that come up in your research, Harry? Interesting question.
It's a very interesting question. It didn't really come up in our research. I mean, one thing I can say is that, you know, mental health challenges can be quite complicated to diagnose, and they can be quite complicated to prescribe. A lot of times people are prescribed medication, and a lot of times that medication doesn't work, and you have to search for another one. And, you know, those in that time where you're searching for the right treatment, it can be very difficult. You know, the reason I got interested in mental health, like most people, it wasn't a passion of mine until a family tragedy happened in my own family. And that was my stepfather became severely depressed and took his life. And, you know, during that, he had never been depressed in his life. And during that initial stage of trying to find what treatment worked for him, he was, you know, all over the place, and he never really got the right treatment, and he spiraled down and ultimately committed suicide. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it became apparent to me that something must be done. I think that's the response from anybody who has a mental health tragedy in their lives. Because we were documentary filmmakers and we're supposed to be calling attention to important but little talked about and misunderstood issues, we decided to do this. But anyway, the misdiagnosis and diagnosing them can be really difficult. I do think one of the most important things, though, is persistence and sticking through misdiagnoses and improper or not working pharmaceutical diagnoses and continuing to seek and continuing to try to find the right treatment and to manage, because like I've said before, you know, these things are manageable, they are treatable, but it often takes persistence in doing it. Just as you would if you had a recurring physical condition. You know, you can't. You mentioned the diabetes example. You know, you can't suddenly go off your insulin, or you suddenly can't, you know, just forget about your diet. These things take persistence.
Well, I want to end on this, and I know that you can't absolutely cover the waterfront, but, you know, many of us who feel physically healthy in the present take care of our bodies by washing our hands. We get flu shots, we get checkups, we exercise, we try to eat right. What kinds of things can we do to protect and maintain our mental health?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and it's something that we do deal with. I mean, episode 4, which will be coming up pretty soon, is about what we call ways to wellness. And so exercise is extremely important. It's extremely important in managing depression, and is often one of the things that's prescribed, actually, in managing depression. Diet is very important in kind of keeping a mood regulated. Creativity turns out to be extremely important. Practicing creativity and actually even using your hands to practice creativity. You know, your hands are there's a whole lot of the motor nerves on the cortex of your brain that control your hands. And so just simply purposeful hand use is actually really good for mental wellness. Self-expression, kind of not surprisingly, would be great for wellness. I already mentioned staying connected to social networks. Getting out into nature is another really important thing. Cortisol, which is the stress hormone, builds up and can be shown, I mean, has been demonstrated in many studies to be reduced by being out in nature. Meditation is also really good. And then finally, again, sleep. We did a whole episode on sleep because it's that important. So and there are others. There are all ways to, you know, what's really interesting. It's interesting enough that I'm considering maybe writing a book on it. I'm not sure. But I have stopped looking at my own health in terms of physical health and started looking at it in terms of mental health. So I instead of saying, okay, I need to eat right and I need to exercise because I need to lose 10 pounds, I now think I need to eat right and need to exercise because I need to keep my mental health as positive as it can be. So I do think that's a really important thing to do, and I think there's many things that are beneficial to your entire physical being by pursuing mental wellness.
Harry Lynch is host and producer of Stories of the Mind. The 12-part Mental Health Channel documentary series airs Sunday at noon on KERA television. Harry, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Thank you, Chris. It's been great to be here.
Thanks.